The Earth is surrounded by an enormous magnetic shield that protects us from solar wind and cosmic rays. It's all very Reagan's Star Wars. And while the Sun and the four giant outer planets, Jupiter, Saturn, Neptune, and Uranus, are all strongly magnetic, the Earth is the only inner planet with a powerful magnetic field. Questions about why and how it operates have absorbed science for centuries, and not until the last 100 years or so has it been discovered that Earth's magnetic field reverses itself, does a complete flip every few hundred thousand years or so. Dr. Gillian Turner is a geophysicist who has turned her fascination with Earth's magnetism into a book called North Pole, South Pole, Traversing the Scientific Endeavour to Crack the Mystery of It All. And Dr. Turner's with me now. Hi, how are you?
Hi, Kim. I'm very well.
Why, then, does Earth have a magnetic field?
Earth's magnetic field, we now know, as a result of centuries of investigation and research, originates in the core of the Earth. The outer part of the core of the Earth is a cauldron of seething, liquid, iron-rich composition. And iron, being an electrical conductor, has electric currents flowing in it. They're maintained by the motion of the Earth, the rotation of the Earth, and the fact that the core is hot and so moving because of thermal convection. And that creates a magnetic field.
It's like a little dynamo and down there.
It's exactly a dynamo.
Oh, a big dynamo down there, probably.
We like to call it the geodynamo, and we think of it as the powerhouse that keeps the magnetic field protecting the planet.
So why does it reverse?
Why does it reverse is a question that the jury is still considering.
I mean, when you say reverse, you mean north becomes south and
north
south becomes north.
South and south becomes north.
Silly question, Gillian. If north becomes south and south becomes north, then west must become east and east must become west.
Magnetic north becomes magnetic south.
Ah.
And magnetic
south. But we're still calling it the same. We'll still call it the same.
But the polar bears...
We don't wake up one morning and go, OK, now I'm heading north.
If you're using a compass, you'll go in the wrong direction. Because
really?
The needle of your compass will point
right.
to magnetic north.
That's right. See, I suppose this is what I find so difficult. You have to separate the bits that we use from the fact of it. So, will we have to relabel all our compasses?
Yes.
You had to think about that, though, didn't you? You're an orienteer. You will have to relabel all your compasses.
We will have to have compasses which point to the south and not the north. Yes. But the sun will still rise in the east and set in the west.
Will it?
Because the Earth will keep rotating the same way.
Oh, how will we know when it reverses and how long does it take?
Well, all these questions are very good questions that researchers are still working on now. I think I can say that we don't have to worry tomorrow about the next reversal because we do know that it takes about 10,000 years, between 5 and 10,000 years, for a reversal to take place completely.
Will we know when it is happening?
When it's happening... You and I won't be here.
But how do you know it's not happening now?
It may very well be starting now, but it will take about the next 2,000 or 3,000 years for the strength of the field to decay to an extent that we can be sure that it will be. And all this...
So the strength of the field decays as a reversal is taking place?
Yes.
And if we are protected by the magnetic shield... from solar wind and cosmic rays, if the magnetic shield declines in strength, then do we face some kind of danger?
That's another question which researchers can't give you a categorical answer for. What we do know is that the Earth's magnetic field has reversed hundreds, thousands of times during the lifetime of the Earth.
How do we know
and
that?
And during the lifetime of life on Earth.
How do we know that?
And we've survived it.
How do we know that?
How do we know that?
Yes. Don't tell me that's another very good question, was the working one.
No. For about the last 100 years, scientists have been working on the magnetisation of rocks, the sort of rocks that geologists study day by day. And they're magnetic.
All rocks?
Almost all rocks. Rocks that are produced by a volcano tend to be quite strongly magnetic because they are rich in magnetic minerals. The sorts of sediments that in New Zealand we see up our rivers, like the Rangitiki River, the Turukina River, the Whanganui River, those blue-grey sediments that you see lining the rivers, they were all laid down on the seafloor millions of years ago, and because New Zealand is actively tectonic, have been lifted up since then by earthquakes and tectonic movement. And they record the magnetic field going back through the last 10, 20 million years. By measuring the magnetization of those sediments, we can see the magnetic field flipping back and forth from north to south, from north to south. And we know that it reverses, on the average, about every 3,000 to 4,000 years.
Yeah.
Yes. So 2 to 3 times per million years. But it's a glorious average. It varies enormously.
Yeah. Which is odd, isn't it? I mean, you'd think there would be some regularity in it?
No.
Why not?
No. Because if you read the book tells you the whole of the story of the quest to understand exactly how the Earth creates the magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've worked out over the last century is that the core of the Earth is liquid iron, as I said earlier, the outer part of the core of the Earth. And it's the fluid motions in that core that are producing the magnetic field. Now, actually, trying to work out how those fluid motions in detail produce a magnetic field, which most of us know from school looks very roughly like the magnetic field of the bar magnet that mm-hmm. we encounter in the school physics lab, it's difficult to comprehend how a seething cauldron of iron can produce a magnetic field that looks as simple as a bar magnet. But it does. And this has been the challenge to theoretical scientists to actually work out how it does that. And they knew that this was the problem in the 1950s, that they had to do all the calculations to bring together the physics of electromagnetism, which some of your listeners will know as Maxwell's equations. They're very famous.
The beautiful four Maxwell equations.
That's right.
Yes.
Together with the equations of physics that describe how fluids flow, to bring all those together and do the calculations to work out from what we know about the Earth's core how it produces a magnetic field is a phenomenal task.
Mm.
A task which they knew they had to do in the 1950s, but the computers that they had at the time were simply not capable of doing it.
But now...
And it wasn't until the mid-1990s, when supercomputers came on the scene, that there was the possibility of doing all these zillions and zillions of calculations.
And are you saying that because there are so many factors, that's why there is an irregularity about the reversal?
Some people have compared it with the first real calculation of a chaotic process. Now, there's another term which crops up in science and is very much misunderstood because the processes can be calculated if you have the power to program a computer to do it. way beyond what the human brain can do in the course of a lifetime. It can be determined if you do all the right calculations. But it's so complicated that the outcome is irregular and what we call chaotic. And the magnetic field, the Earth's magnetic field, is a very good example of this.
If we're able to figure out that much, are we not able to figure out when the next reversal is going to happen?
Not at the moment. The calculations which have been done to date are still what physicists call models. They still can't reproduce the Earth exactly because of there are still constraints in the capabilities of computers. And so some of the factors, for example, the fluidity of the core, cannot be programmed exactly. And so we have to make approximations.
How did you first get interested in it?
The theory is way beyond me, I have to admit.
That's a relief.
Writing the last chapter of this book, I have to say, was a huge challenge to me personally. And I relied heavily on advice from the experts who have done the work themselves. I was extremely fortunate to have colleagues in the field who could help me with the task. I got into this through being a physics student who felt that perhaps physics was a little dry and was looking for something to spark my imagination. And I think many scientists will tell you this. Their research area was something which they became inspired by sometime in their career. And for me, it was my third year as a student in Cambridge, where theoretical physics was becoming a bit dry, and I discovered geophysics. And I thought the application of all this physics I'd been learning to a subject out there that involved the environment that would take me out into the field, sampling these rocks I've just talked to you about, sampling mud off the bottom of a lake, was something that I wanted to do.
And it's such a big story.
Geomagnetism was a big story. Yeah. And it's taken me 30 plus years to get to the stage of being able to put the whole story together.
Now, we mentioned that you're an orienteer. Is that cause or effect, as it were? I mean, did you start running around with compass in hand before you got interested in Earth's magnetic field or after?
I wish I could claim that. Particularly after hearing Professor Sir Paul Callaghan at the book launch on Thursday night, where he said, if you want to give a child a gift that will inspire them in science, give them a compass.
Yes.
And that's exactly what we do with our orienteers. We give them a compass and a map, and they have to navigate using the magnetic field. I wish I could claim the same for myself. I can for my children. My children are both orienteers and started at an early age.
But how did you?
How did I? My husband introduced me to the sport. And I have to admit, it's something which I'm not quite as passionate about as geomagnetism itself, but it occupies a lot of my non-work time.
It must be very nice to be able to look at your compass and relate it to the big picture we've just been talking about.
Sometimes I find it very hard because I'm out there in the forest and my legs tell me you need to go this way and my compass says you need to go a different way. And I have to remind myself the compass is always right because you know it follows the magnetic field. And you know the magnetic field is pointing to magnetic north. And it's very hard sometimes to have the professional side win over from the conceptual side, which says, I'm sure you need to go the other way.
Well, I hope you're not out in that forest, Gillian, when it decides to flip over.
Me too.
Nice to talk to you. Dr. Gillian Turner, whose book's called North Pole, South Pole, The Epic Quest to Solve the Great Mystery of Earth's Magnetism.